Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Now, it is that time of the night. I love the end of the night. I love the interviews at the end of the night where we talk to somebody interesting. Well, tonight I'm going to be talking to somebody I met many, many years ago, actually, Geraldine Comiskey, who's an author and journalist, and has also worked with the Sunday World. But she's also the author of many horror books, but recently has written a book about Ian Bailey. Now, I was going to say I had the privilege, but if you want to call it a privilege, I interviewed Ian Bailey twice. Actually, one of his interviews is on my podcast website, if you go to that. And I'll just play a little clip of it here. Hang on, just to give you an idea, a sense of it, all right?
Still to this day, will say that you're an innocent man. Do you believe you'll ever be completely vindicated?
Well, if my prayers are answered, yes.
Do you consider yourself normally a violent person?
No.
Why did you strike out at Jules?
It was to do with alcohol and abuse of alcohol, and it's to my eternal shame. And,
According to Malachi Reed and according to other people, that you had admitted that you confessed to them that you had done it.
Of course I did it, yeah. Of course I did. Jokingly.
Ian, at that point, would you not have said, guys, I've had enough of this? As you've just told me all the way through this, that you're... Ian, hang on for a second. You've just told me your life had been ruined for 25 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And would you not have said, guys, I've had enough of this. I don't want any more of this. I want to try and quieten my life down a bit. The bit of life that I have left to me.
Well, I don't know if you want to go and listen to the rest of that, by the way, you can. It's on my podcast website. I also did an interview on the radio as well, at one stage going back a few years ago too. And I'm going to be honest with you. I asked earlier on for people to text in and say, do you believe he was guilty or not guilty? The vast majority said yes, he believed he was guilty. About 30% said no, he wasn't. So you have to look at this objectively. And if I was a betting man and somebody said to put a bet on it, I wouldn't be able to. I don't know whether he did do it or not. But Geraldine Comiskey has written a book, and it's called The Blow-In, Ian Bailey, His Fight to Clear His Name. And she joins me on the line. Geraldine, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall, hi. And listen, thanks very much for leading into that earlier by saying I was objective, because I am objective, but I've been accused of being a fangirl, of being a cheerleader, and of being a friend of his and everything, you know. And I just, ever since I just said I don't believe that, I don't know if he did it or not, but I am objective, but I'm objective. But at the same time, the more I think about it, I can't see how he could have done it, and that was why I decided to put that case in the book. But at the same time, I was going to write it for him. He asked me to write his memoir for him, to help him write his memoir, and I decided I wouldn't do that because I just wasn't ready to take anyone's side. But then after he died, then people were saying to me, you should write a book about it, because I'd been putting stuff up on social media, and I kind of distanced myself from that story for years. And then I said, okay, I'll write the book, but I won't just take a side, and I'll put it in objectively. But even when I look at everything, when I piece everything together, I just don't think he could have done it. But I could be wrong.
Let's go to it.
That's the only way you can approach it, yeah.
Yeah, let's go to it. I mean, look, you heard on that little clip I played there, he admitted that he, you know, that he, to his eternal shame, that he abused Jules, and, you know, and he beat her up a few times, his wife. Yeah. I mean, so given his kind of violent behaviour and his history, how do we kind of reconcile those actions with, you know, a belief of innocence? Because we know he's capable of things like that.
But you see, I think he's been remarkably non-violent for nearly 30 years after that. That was a long time ago. He obviously went through kind of a lot of therapy for it at the time, and he went to Alcoholics Anonymous and everything. And whenever he tried to explain, you know, that it was a drunken incident, and she tried to explain it for him, they were accused of minimising it. He was certainly accused of minimising it. And she was, I mean, Jill Thomas has been treated disgracefully as well. She's been patronised as if she's some poor victim. You know, she's a very strong woman, actually. I met her. She's very kind of, you know, she has her own dignity. Mm-hmm. And with all these people patronising her as well for giving him. So I think that I think for a man who's supposed to be out of control, he's been very, he knew these journalists who were interviewing him were two-faced as well. A lot of them would ring him up and they'd pretend to be his friend and then they'd write something scurrilous about him. He learned some bitter experience. But he was saying that once that he knew they were being two-faced, but he had to be polite to them because that was the way he'd always worked as a journalist. It was the only way to get information. And he knew there was a game with them, there was a game with him. So I don't think he was, they all said he wasn't very self-aware. I know he was a bit tone deaf when he was younger, but I think he was more self-aware as he got older than they thought.
Yeah.
And he was very, very sanguine for a person who's supposed to be so violent. So that's another reason I don't think that I think he was well capable of controlling his temper. And I think the idea that when he was very drunk, that he would go across the mountain and murder this woman that he didn't even know, and murder and then not even leave a trace. I mean, there was no DNA found on her of his. He gave a DNA sample, and I'd imagine if he had been that drunk and out of control, he would have left a big mess. I mean, whoever killed her did leave a big mess, but he would have left a big mess of his own DNA for a start. And the thing is as well, he didn't really have the opportunity. He was so drunk. I mean, it's only after emerging now in one of the papers that a guard. I mean, this is from a journalist who believes he's guilty. Fenton Maloney has written a book about it. And he said that there was an excerpt from the book where it said a guard was watching out for Ian Bailey that night, and he was going to arrest him, and he was going to look at if he got into the car to drive. He was that drunk. He was obviously, very obviously drunk. If the guard could just see by just looking at him in the car. So how could a man like that either drive or walk?
But then you call your book The Blow-In, right? And and of course, for people who don't know the background, of course, he was this British journalist that came to live in this small town. So, do you think it was just he's the likely suspect, he's the odd one out? Is that why he was selected?
Yeah, but I know. You know what they're saying? They're trying to rebrand the word blow-in now. I've noticed this in West Cork. They're all trying to say, "Oh, it's an affectionate term." It's not really. But see, there are different kinds of blow-ins. I mean, these were kind of all. These were sort of posh people. Ian Bailey had his voice, his plummy voice that he put on, but he wasn't really posh. He was a butcher's son from Manchester, from outside Manchester. But they knew that. And I remember there was this snobby old professor that he did some gardening work for him that he said was stingy, didn't pay him properly, and he was trying to give him advice on his post. He wrote this awfully patronising piece in, I think it was one of the American papers, a famous one, the New Yorker, I think. But he was saying that Ian Bailey had lost his moorings. You know, in other words, he should get back in his box, and he's a common little man, and he should go back, a common big man in that case, and he should get back in his box and be a big butcher's son, and he shouldn't be mixing with these people who have university degrees. And you know, he was kind of, Ian Bailey was, he hadn't got a university degree, but he had won a scholarship to a prestigious school. And I think that kind of rankled with some of these posh people. And the locals would accept them because they were sort of, as locals always accept posh people, posh outsiders. But he wasn't a posh blow-in, and he wasn't even one of the hippies on the outskirts. They were posh hippies as well.
Yeah, but I mean, he took numerous defamation lawsuits over the years against newspapers, for example. You know, who kind of indicated that he might be guilty or whatever, right? And he was unsuccessful in those. So kind of, how do you interpret those rulings, you know, by juries or by judges?
Yeah.
You know,
I honestly don't think anyone set out to blame him or frame him or blame him. I don't think they set out to. I think it was kind of an inbuilt sort of, it's the unconscious prejudice that people talk about now. I mean, they should know about this. They're in like West Cork is not the Wild West as he thought of it. It's the Woke West. Woke people are supposed to know about unconscious bias, but not when it comes to a big white Englishman. You know, if he'd been maybe a black man, there would have been kind of riots in the street, and they would have been getting their pussy ears out to do it, like the Donald Trump riots or something. But because he was a white English man, he was the most hated of blow-ins, and on top of that, he had the temerity not to even be a posh one, you know.
Yeah.
So he didn't. He was one of the worst. It's not as it's bohemian, but it's not bohemian. The bohemianism doesn't extend to people like him. And I think other people have pointed this out too. I mean, I mentioned some of these blogs in my book. I actually refer to them. There's an excellent blog by she was a student journalist at the time, and she mentioned that Leah Stokes was her name, I just remember. She mentioned that he had this brash British Army officer kind of thing, and I think they felt he was mocking them because he came over there and he said he was a poet. First, he started working in the fish factory, then they discovered that he had pretensions of being a poet.
But he was still selling his poetry up to the day he died.
Was, but he was, yeah. But you know what? They called it doggerel. And I've looked at some of their poems now, and I wouldn't be too keen. I don't think their poems,
my
their
cup of tea,
poems
no.
were an awful lot better than his. But I think they felt he was doing a parody of their poetry because he'd go into a pub and he'd start reciting and he'd start talking about I mean, I can't, the word, but he played something like the wild beauty of Dunmanis, Spain. He'd be kind of a big smirk on his face, and they knew he was mocking them, and he had this Monty Python voice. He sounded like Gary Keitel when he was doing it. And they knew that he was, they had come all the way over to West Cork to find themselves and to write great art, make great art and write great poetry.
There was two documentaries, by the way, neither which...
Cliches, you know, but then he was mocking them for that, you know?
He told me he wasn't very happy with the Netflix documentary that came out because, obviously, he didn't approve any of it or whatever.
Well, I mean, it's completely biased, you know? I mean, and they're entitled to review, but they're not entitled to the review without balancing it. I mean, they're not entitled to blame somebody who, on you know, a man is innocent or anyone is innocent until they've been proven guilty. So I think that you know, it was wrong of them to do that. But I think it would be equally wrong for them to say he's completely innocent. But you are entitled to, if you're going to
a presumption of innocence.
If you're going to pick sides, presumption of innocence.
Well, when you say a presumption of innocence, he was found guilty in his absence in a French court. Now, I do understand the French courts have a lower bar when it comes to,
But if it doesn't test them, and I mean, it has its flaws in our minds, but in their minds it hasn't. And in their minds, to the French, I mean, I did speak to Sophie's uncle as well. I mean, the French system has kind of strengths that we don't have, and we have strengths that we could say they don't have. So I think both systems, there's no perfect system, but I still think that, you know, if he had gone over there, he said he wouldn't have got a fair trial. Mr. Gazelle said he would have got a fair trial, certainly would have, and they would have been fair to him. So we'll never know that because he didn't go over there.
Why, do you think if he had have gone over and gave evidence and took the stand himself that he may not have been found guilty?
I don't know. I mean, I would find it. I'm just guessing that they wouldn't. They wouldn't have, because you see, the locals had all said this stuff about him, but they didn't think. I'm amazed they didn't seem to guess that he was being ironic. And sometimes the time when he was crying, they said that was a genuine confession. Because this was frustration. I would imagine. I'd imagine if I was accused of something as horrible as that, I'd be crying too, and it was, you know, and you'd be kind of in disbelief. I can imagine being sarcastic. I can imagine ranting in disbelief that you'd just been fitted up for a murder as you saw it. So he
didn't Micheál Martin only come out this week to say that Ian Bailey was guilty? Well, he believed he was.
Yeah, Micheál Martin, I'd love to know what evidence Micheál Martin has, because he should go to the guards with it. Because, I mean, even the guards who investigated it now would have to admit that the scene wasn't properly protected or anything. No one, you know, they
is it true a gate went missing? Did somebody tell me?
Yeah, they meant where. I know the guards. I know some of these guards covered other, other crimes, and I know they did great research and they work on their instincts and they do all the interviews with locals. But the problem was the locals had this view of him, rightly or wrongly, and he did raise a lot of red flags with them. They didn't like him and they couldn't help it. And it was, you can't help a visceral reaction. But it's not enough to get somebody convicted. And when the DPP rejected it, Micheál Martin doesn't seem to have any respect then for the office of the DPP if he thinks that, we let this man down.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the time, as you said rightly, the scene itself, there was a huge mess made by An Garda Síochána. Mm. I mean, is it true, by the way, or is it just a myth that a gate, a big black gate, went missing?
This is a rumor. I mean, I've heard that the gate wasn't in Bandon Garda station, and it was there. And they find it's kind of lost in the mist of time now. But apparently there was a gate because Sophie was always fighting with the neighbor over the gate being left open, and and she wanted it closed. And apparently the big breeze block was down at the gate. I mean, it's a complete fallacy, I think, that somebody grabbed this block from the pump house and ran down. I'd say it was always down at the end of the drive. It was there to keep the gate open, and the stone was one. I looked at it. There's a wall there, and the stone would have been one of those stones that lodged. It's also not it's not obvious at all that this person bashed her loads of times with, you know, 50 times or not. I mean, she might, the pathologist seemed to think that that was what killed her, but there's other evidence that her little hatchet that was gone by her door, and this has been well known. They're presenting this now as if it's only new, but the little axe that she had inside the door was like a little thing that she'd used to break apart to open a fire extinguisher. To get the fire thing, that type of thing. She had that inside in the house, but we don't really.
I mean,
know
what about the other evidence? I mean, a lot of people would watch the documentaries and they would have seen the evidence, say that, for example, in Ian Bailey's studio, where the clothes he had been wearing that night, he had tried to destroy them or burn them.
He was wearing the coat while he was interviewed by the guards. The transcript of the interview with the guards was leaked by an officer of the DPP's office. And he said, the coat I'm wearing now, that's the coat you mean that I'm supposed to have been destroyed. But, his black overcoat, he had this big black overcoat.
That's a famous picture that we always see him in the black overcoat.
Yeah, he was on New Year's Day for the Christmas Day, or the swim shortly after the murder. Anyway, he wore it that day. down. I was down on the seafront at the harbour for the swim, and he was wearing his big black coat with his hat. Now, unless he has two identical big black coats, which I'd find amazing for a man who'd come over the pauper. But he apparently Jules Thomas said she said that was actually the she had an evidence that it was a pair of shorts that he had, a black shorts that he put in because he'd been killing turkeys, and you know they were covered in blood. And I mean, I think most people would have just thrown them away, but he obviously wanted those shorts and he had them washing. But this was just a girl who was staying in the house and she saw something soaking in the bucket. And later on, years later, she gave interviews. I mean, most of these people's interviews as well, whether it was they were trying to remember. And you know, I mean, I find it hard to remember like what I did yesterday, what I had for my breakfast today. Even you know, like,
yes.
Imagine trying
what
to remember
happened, year, what happened 20 years ago.
Yeah, imagine having to find in fine detail what exactly you saw in a house that you'd been in like years before. You know,
I mean, there was a suggestion that he had kind of tampered with evidence or that he had influenced witnesses' testimony, like Malachi Reed and people like that. Do you think he did any of that? I mean, what I'm asking you is, okay, you're saying you're being objective, right? And that's great because I'm very objective. And I always, like, so I said it at the start, if somebody said to me, here's 100 quid, put a bet on Ian Bailey, did he do it or not? I wouldn't know which way to go. I genuinely
wouldn't. Either, no, yeah.
I mean, I know the man, I've interviewed him twice. He's odd. He's a little bit of a psycho. He's a narcissist. I would say
things. I agree with you as a narcissist anyway. Yeah, I'd agree with that bit. Yeah,
yeah, and he seems to love the attention because even in that clip I played to him, I said to him, why are you constantly looking for attention if you want this to go away? Because he seemed to want to keep getting the attention of it. It was almost like he enjoyed being the suspect. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think part of it was he was an extreme extrovert. You know, he actually didn't like, but another thing was that he actually, the attention thing, I think he felt like, you know, the way he slept in his last days, he slept in a room overlooking the street. He wouldn't sleep in the bed. And not just because he was uncomfortable, he wanted to be seen from the street because he felt that if he would die alone or something, you know, he was worried about his health. And he was also worried that he'd been after brought to France. And so he wanted to keep in the public eye, and that was his way of doing it. I mean, he did say that loads of times. He said that he needed to keep this going because he was always terrified that somebody would come up in a van and I mean, anyone would do it. That one of his haters would do is they'd drive him across on the ferry and dump him in France. And because it has happened. It happened to the famous case of this man who was kidnapped and brought to France. And, you know, he wasn't saying the French people would do it, but he said somebody would do it. Mm-hmm. And they would jump in the van, then he could be arrested.
Okay, but do you personally, Geraldine, I know you're saying you're being objective and you said you've written the book objectively. Do you think he did it?
I'm not going to bet on it, but I would say that he doesn't. The more I think about it, the more I think he hasn't done it. I mean, this is just my opinion at the moment is that I don't think he's done it based on everything I know about him. But I would be open to if they found his DNA on the murder weapon, say, and they found out that he had done it, or by some miracle there was something came out that he had done it. Not here.
That's
say,
unlikely.
But actual,
well, that's unlikely.
Yeah, I would say yeah, but it's so unlikely. I think it's very highly unlikely that he did it. I think somebody else did it.
Well, it's highly unlikely they're going to get new evidence, you know, unless...
They might get a confession, they might get somebody might, you know, you never know. I mean, there's been loads, I go into all the theories in the book, there've been some wild conspiracy. I don't believe it was some hitman from France, that's kind of ludicrous, you know.
No.
I mean, it'd be something like, it'd be great in an action movie or something, but it wouldn't work in real life. It's just, I've been to the place, it's a wild, wild place, and I actually used a pedometer. And I use my sat nav and everything, and I tried driving and walking the distance. I don't think anyone would except a local did it, but I think that, you know, that's what I think. And people don't want to believe a local did it, but there were lots of people living in that place. I mean, there's a few suspects, you know, so...
And there was many, I don't want to start mentioning people's names, right? Yeah. But there was other suspects at the time.
Yeah.
But he seemed to be the main one that the guards kept focusing on over and over and over again. And I think he drew the guards to himself, didn't he?
Yeah,
like
he didn't know what. Yeah, he thought he was getting a great. He thought this was, as he said, a hoot. You know, he thought this would be a great hoot. Like he'd get his story, and I had a feeling he was going to write some piece. He thought this would all be solved, and he was going. This is my gut feeling that he was going to write some article saying I was an error man article. You know, like a double page spread in all the tabloids saying I was falsely accused of murder and all, and now I get to interview the real murderer and all this kind of stuff. That's what in his head. This is what was happening. And in reality, they were looking at him saying, no, you are the murderer. He didn't think that. He was speaking quite freely to the guards and he was giving them mince pies and tea and everything and bringing the journalists in. He thought this was all going to be a big laugh and he'd be flavour of the month and he'd have a glittering career. But he did not think it was going to go turn that way on him. No way did he, or else he would have, you know, he would have reacted differently, I think.
But I think the locals in the area and people from Cork, because I'm looking at some of the texts coming in here, people in Cork saying, we're glad he's gone, he's definitely a murderer, blah, blah, blah. Look, we can say what he wants now, he's dead now. I'm surprised if he did do it. He's the sort of person, he's so narcissistic, that on his deathbed he would have admitted it, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, Niall. Yeah, he would have, you know, the other thing that I was just saying to someone, I was saying this to Sophie, his uncle, actually. Yeah, that's a very good point you're making there. But he also would have boasted, if he'd been having an affair with Sophie, you know, think he would have been bragging all over the place, even before she was murdered. He would have been telling everyone that he had an affair with this woman, you know, if he did.
But he did meet. He did meet her. I mean, I know some people say he didn't meet her.
He met her briefly. Yeah, definitely he did. But I mean, everyone met everyone briefly. You know, it's a small community, and the arts community is even smaller. And he was going to all these arty events. He was up the West Cork and at the festival on Cape Clear Island. So yeah, of course he met her. I mean, everyone, even the guy, the witness, even said that everyone was talking to everyone there, and he only saw him talking to him for a few minutes.
And do you believe him when he said, because Malachi Reid said he confessed it to him, right?
The boy didn't say that until the next morning. You know, it was only when he realised that he was obviously frightened the next day when he thought about it, when the guards went into the school and started asking them all. But I don't know, he might have been frightened of them too when he was saying it. But he went to bed when he went home, and they didn't hear the voice. The boy didn't complain about this until the next day, and he didn't turn up in court in France to repeat his testimony. His mother turned up and spoke for him. Now I believe the mother was genuinely horrified and genuinely believed that Ian Bailey confessed to her son and intimidated him. But I believe the boy did. He did say that Ian Bailey
confessed.
Said all this to him.
Yeah, but Ian Bailey, in the interview I did with him, Ian said,
well, I thought it was confession.
Yeah, well, Ian just said, I know, I just said that. He said, and you heard that bit of the clip that I played at the start. He said, I was just saying that. Of course I did.
Yeah, I can imagine someone just saying that. I don't find that hard at all. I don't know why people are saying it's an English, irony is an English thing. It's an Irish thing as well. It's not certainly not exclusive to English people. And French people understand irony too. Mm. They don't, it's not true that people, Italians, I live in Italy, Italians do. People who say they don't understand irony, I don't believe them. You know, I don't think there's anyone that doesn't understand irony.
Well, look, it sounds like an interesting read for people who want to read the other side of the story, or what you want to be objective about it. I know many people believe he was guilty. We'll never know now, of course, because he's gone, he's dead.
Yeah. We might find out. We never know. I live in hope, you know, and I'll have to change my book. I'll update my book if something comes out, you know.
Okay. Well, the book is called The Blow-In, Ian Bailey's Fight to Clear His Name. Where can they get it, Geraldine?
It's only on Amazon, right? I was going to go to a publisher, but then when Senan Maloney started bringing his book out, I said, okay, I'm going to get the legal bit finished. I have to get it legal because I have my reputation to protect. So I said, I don't want anyone claiming I made things up. So I got it legaled. And then I said, I'm bringing it out quickly now. And so I got it out this week. And the thing is, it doesn't show up on Amazon immediately. So it's literally just fresh out. So if anyone wants to get the link to it, it's on my Twitter page, Twitter account, on Jerry Comiskey Writer.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, what I'll do is, if I get a chance, there's no point me doing this hour of the night, but tomorrow what I'll do is I'll retweet that link for you. And so if people want to go...
Smile.
Yeah, if people want to go to my Twitter account, you'll see it there. Tomorrow I'll do it. If I get a chance tomorrow, I'll do it. And... yeah, so the book, by the way, when I search for it, it's called The Blow-In, Ian Bailey's Fight to Clear His Name. You can look up Geraldine Comiskey. If you just search Geraldine Comiskey, by the way, you'll find her Twitter account as well. Or, sorry, X account. X.
I'm going to let call it X. Yeah, she's called X, yeah. Geraldine, it's on woke now.
We met many years ago, Geraldine. You probably don't remember. Yeah. But we met many...
I remember some of the mad stories you did. Yeah, I remember the one about the love doctor. Remember that one?
Oh yes, the G spot guy. Yeah.
G spot guy. Oh jeepers, yeah. That was funny. Yeah.
We've met many times throughout the years when you were working.
You should get him on again, actually. Yeah.
I won't even tell people what he was actually really his name was. But anyway, I had him on the Late Late Show or something, didn't I? I got him over for the Late Late Show.
And we went along to the thing in Trinity College, I think, and he was speaking out, and he was trying to shock people, and he just didn't realise that they were shockproof there, you know.
Yeah.
This is a debate. Remember that?
It was very, very funny. But look, Geraldine, it's lovely talking to you again, and thank you very much indeed. And I appreciate you coming on to talk to us. But the book, again, if people want to get it, it's called The Blow-In, Ian Bailey's Fight to Clear His Name. It's written by journalist and reporter Geraldine Comiskey. So if you want an objective view of the Ian Bailey case, well, there you go. I know many of you think he's guilty, and that's fine too. You know, you're welcome to feel he's guilty. Thank you, Derry Ann, by the way. I hope I will get well soon. She says, apparently a clump of Sophie's hair went missing. Darianne said. Darianne, I've heard that story too. And I don't know whether that's true. I don't know. Apparently the gate went missing. Seemingly the gate was taken into evidence and nobody knows where it is. And the reason people are texting now, what was the relevance of the gate? Well, they believe there may have been fingerprints on it or DNA on it. So it was a big black gate just beside where she was murdered. And now, I don't know, again, if that's just an urban myth that the gate went missing. But it did, seemingly. I couldn't call it. You just couldn't call it. Somebody else says, no, but he was found guilty. No, he wasn't. He was found guilty in a French court in his absence. Now, of course, as I said, the bar is set much lower when it comes to the burden of evidence and the proof, or should I say the burden of evidence when it comes to proving somebody is guilty in France. They have a much different legal system. And that's why his extradition wasn't secured. So the French couldn't secure an extradition to bring him to France because under Irish law, there wasn't enough evidence to send a case to the DPP. So as far as the DPP in Ireland is concerned, he didn't do it. There wasn't enough evidence. But yet Micheál Martin said during the week that he did do it. Now, I'm surprised, and Jenny said if Micheál Martin is evidence, maybe he should go to the guards. Micheál Martin wouldn't have been able to say that while he was alive because that would have been defamation. But he's dead now, so he can say what he wants. But Micheál Martin, who's a Cork man himself, believes that he is guilty. But people all have their opinion on it. And if you've watched the documentaries, I encourage you, by the way, there is two documentaries. One was on RTÉ and one was on Netflix. And he approved the one on RTÉ. I think it was RTÉ. But he didn't approve the Netflix one. But they did use clips of them. And I know he took a case against Netflix because it was allegedly biased. But it's still a good documentary. So watch it. Anyway, thank you very much indeed. Hopefully I'll feel better tomorrow, by the way. Thanks to everybody who's sending their good wishes, by the way. Hopefully the antibiotics will kick in. I feel better. I do feel a little bit better now than I did earlier on today, let me tell you. Anyway, thank you very much indeed to Molly and also to Zoe as well. We should talk to you again tomorrow night at 9. Enda's on the way with some lovely loves.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.